This is the Quality News Network. More than 3,000 people jailed under Pakistan's emergency rule were released today. The prisoners were freed soon after judges yesterday overruled legal challenges to President Pervez Musharraf's re-election. The Bush administration has been pressuring Musharraf to end the emergency rule. The U.S. Supreme Court will decide the fate of the handgun ban in Washington, D.C. The ban was struck down and seen as incompatible with the Second Amendment. Gun control advocates say the Second Amendment was intended to ensure states could maintain militias. The United Nations gave a dire warning today that the world risks a resurgence of AIDS if countries let their guard down. UN health officials say evidence shows the AIDS epidemic is creeping back in countries that have become less careful. Each day there are nearly 7,000 new HIV infections and over 5,000 AIDS-related deaths. The U.S. accepted an Iraqi invitation to hold new talks with Iran about the security situation in Iraq. It would be the third round of talks between Ryan Crocker, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, and his Iranian counterpart. The Federal Reserve reported today that it expects slower economic growth and an increase in unemployment next year due to the housing slump and credit crunch. The nation's number two buyer and guarantor of home loans lost $2 billion in the third quarter. Freddie Mac announced that it must raise fresh capital to meet regulatory requirements. In France, civil servants, teachers, and hospital staff will join striking transit workers for a day to protest government reforms. The nationwide strike, now in its seventh day, is costing France around $500 million daily. Several Blackwater security guards have been subpoenaed by a federal grand jury as part of a new investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqis. It's the latest investigation of the September incident. Last week, the FBI determined 14 of those deaths were unjustified. In Baghdad today, 5 people were killed, 11 wounded in morning attacks. The director of Iraq's geological survey was gunned down on his way to work. In Bangladesh, rescue workers trying to deliver food and fresh water to victims of last week's cyclone have been hampered by poor communication. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business, next.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new Internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Scientists say they know how to use skin cells for cloning without using the more controversial embryonic stem cells. The research, published in 2 landmark papers released online, is groundbreaking, but does come with a caveat. The technique used can cause cancer as a byproduct. A new university study indicates more American women under the age of 45 are dying of heart disease. Increased obesity rates and subsequent diabetes may be to blame. The corresponding death rate for men suffering from heart disease appears to have leveled off. 2 spacewalking astronauts wired up the International Space Station's newest room today. The addition to the International Space Station will keep the next shuttle back on track for early December. Hewlett-Packard beat Wall Street expectations today by posting a jump in quarterly profits on a 28% increase in net income. The company warned investors, however, not to expect such growth to sustain itself during the next year. Amazon.com has released an electronic book device called the Kindle, which allows users to download and read 90,000 books. And on Wall Street today, light sweet crude oil is trading up $3.39 at $98.03 a barrel. The Dow Jones ended up 52 points. We have more news on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Okay, don't On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! What's that old Nat King Cole lyric? What a day this has been, what a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in love. No, it's not. But it's been a day. Sitting here and watching the fun roll past the computer, and you know, just wondering what's next. I'm in full bore waiting for the other shoe to drop mode, and I can't fully explain why or how I'm that way. I just know that I am. Every day, it seems like every day anymore. And you know, feel free to chime in on this when the mood strikes you. I wake up wondering what's next. You know, my what's next for today was slithering Scott McClellan. And, you know, just breathtaking stuff. He, you know, he's got a book coming out. And this story, you can find it over at Salon. An excerpt of the book posted on Slithering Scott McClellan's publisher's website says, quote, you know, sit down. The most powerful leader in the world had called upon me to speak on his behalf and help restore credibility he lost amid the failure to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. So I stood at the White House briefing room podium in front of the glare of the Klieg lights for the better part of 2 weeks and publicly exonerated two of the senior-most aides in the White House, Karl Rove and Scooter Libby. He continues, there was a problem. It was not true. I had unknowingly passed along false information. And five of the highest-ranking officials in the administration were involved in my doing so. Rove, Libby, the vice president, the president's chief of staff. Oh, dear. And the president himself. Could somebody get a memo to Nancy Capitolosi, please? You know, I feel like Linus standing on the stage for that segment in Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown, where he humbly looks up at the booth and says, lights, please. You know, just this little tiny still voice, lights, please. Subpoenas, please. Bill of impeachment, please. So there we are. Scott McClellan, not under subpoena, certainly not under oath, has dropped the dime on George W. Bush and a whole bunch of others. He's dropped the dime on the vice president. He's dropped the dime on Karl Rove. He's dropped the dime on Josh Bolton. He's dropped the dime on Scooter Libby. Nothing to see here. Move along. These are not the droids you're looking for. But do you see what I mean about sort of being in waiting for the other shoe to drop mode? It's Thanksgiving week, so necessarily nobody's paying attention to anything. You would assume that, I don't know, maybe the Johnny-on-the-spot Washington press corps just lives on tryptophan. You know, tryptophan's that chemical that's in turkey that makes you pass out while you're watching the Lions lose on Thanksgiving Day. But yeah, Scott McClellan, that Scott McClellan, has said that his false statements to the people of the United States of America were procured, were induced, were suborned, were pimped by the Vice President and the President of the United States of America. Five of the highest ranking officials in the administration were involved in my passing along false information. Rove, Libby, the Vice President, the President's Chief of Staff, and the President himself. Madam Speaker, what does it take to put impeachment back on the table? What does it take, Madam Speaker, to put the Constitution of the United States back on the table? Individual members of Congress, what does it take to get you to stand up and demand that you be allowed to honor the oath that you swore . What does it take? This is a slap in the face, you know. I well remember, I know I'm going here, and the whole world knows I'm going here, because you can't not go here. I remember when the little wing nuts had a blue screaming purple polka-dotted hissy. I mean, had kittens with crocheted tails, because they said that Bill Clinton violated his oath of office when, not under oath at all, he stood before the American people and said, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. And, you know, that may or may not have been true, depending on how one defines sex. But that's neither here nor there. That was the hissy that they had. That was sufficient cause to launch a $70 million witch hunt of the President of the United States. I say witch hunt because, frankly, whether or not he had sex and whom he had it with is none of my damn business any more than who I have sex with, Agnes, is once in a while when the kids are asleep, is anybody else's. I mean, is it just me? I mean, you get this, right? It was a public pronouncement, not under oath, that lit the whole fuse to the impeachment process. And how many times? And I'm sure there's some journalist that will actually, you know, put down the hookah long enough to, you know, do the counting. How many times was the WMD lie repeated, straight-faced to the people of the United States? This statement relates directly to the WMD argument from the White House. And slithering Scott McClellan says that he willfully, actually, intentionally misled the people of the United States at the connivance of the President, the Vice President, and the chief advisors thereto. When, Madam Speaker, when does presidential, and this is, I'm sorry, this is just, I want an answer to this. It's not worth having Nancy Pelosi on this program and all the hoop jumping and friendly I gotta be, because I don't think I could. When does presidential misconduct, when does presidential criminality, when does presidential and vice presidential felonious conduct rise to the level of an impeachable offense? And when it rises to that level, what is the obligation of the House of Representatives? Is the House of Representatives, and this is a legitimate question, And it's, I suppose, an academic question or something that you stand around with a martini in your hand somewhere inside the belt, went, well, fa, 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 and discuss it, you know, because you're a highfalutin constitutional lawyer from Harvard and you've got a bow tie on or something. And you just, what is, and I'd love to have an answer. Does the House of Representatives have the option or prerogative to ignore felonious presidential conduct because the House is afraid of what will happen to it if it exercises its constitutional mandate? Can the House of Representatives turn a blind eye to illegal presidential conduct? Can the House of Representatives turn a blind eye to high crimes and misdemeanors? Is the impeachment language in the Constitution of the United States precatory or hortatory? Boy, those are some fine little $10 words. What that means is, can they let it slide? Can they give the, can the House of Representatives sit in the face of known criminal conduct, known high crimes and misdemeanors by the President of the United States, President of the United States of America, and the Vice President? Can the House of Representatives choose to give the President and Vice President a mulligan? Can the House of Representatives give the President and Vice President of the United States of America a do-over? Is constitutional process inside the House of Representatives nothing more than a game of stickball on a Brooklyn side street? That really is what it boils down to, isn't it? When you take information like this confession by slithering Scott McClellan, and you hold it up to the likes of Nancy Capitolosi, and you say, honey, here it is. And she says, don't wanna. And you say, but you gotta. And she says, ain't neither. And you say, do too. And she says, can't make me. Who wins? Who wins? Until such time as you and I, we, us, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, until such time as we exercise the franchise at the ballot box to compel her, the power of the Constitution compels you, the power of the Constitution compels you, the power of the Constitution compels you. Until we do that, she wins. Now, there's a little bit of inspiration. I got this from our ace news ninja, Gene, last night. Rolled in on Sunday. The Progressive Caucus and a couple of other caucuses in California managed to actually censure the Women's Caucus, the Irish American Caucus, and the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party censured Senator Dianne Feinstein for her vichy-esque, complicit, capitulatory conduct in the United States Senate. And by the way, there's a story out there that really puts the lie, I mean, you noticed this probably yesterday evening, there's a story out there that puts the lie to Senator Feinstein's argument that, well, you know, we had to confirm Judge Mukasey. I mean, if we didn't do it, George would have just given him a recess appointment and all these people would have been recess appointed. Well, there's Harry Reid. The Senate's still in session to keep George Bush from doing any recess appointments. But they just noticed that or came up with that notion after Senator Feinstein put the shiv in Uncle Sam's ribs? Is that how it works? I'm proud of the Progressive Caucus and the Women's Caucus and the Irish American Caucus of the California Democratic Party for censuring Senator Feinstein, who had no comment, naturally. Now that they've done that, and now that we know what we know from the mouth and the pen of slithering Scotty McClellan, God, I sound like Paul Hart. Good day. But now that we know what we know, maybe the California Progressive Caucus can, how about a censure motion against Nancy Capitulosi? What a slap in the face this is. What an astonishing the raspberry this is. That slithering Scotty McClellan feels like he can put in a book a blanket statement that he was actively involved in lying to the people of the American of the United States on camera in front of God and everybody, and he can go, yeah, Speaker of the House won't do anything about it. I get away with it. Nah, 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 nah. You suck. Isn't that what this is? Sure it is. You think they're upset inside the halls of power? Do you think Dana Perineum is wondering how she's possibly going to spin this? Nah. Don't think so. The update on the story, and this is over at Salon. The McClellan story. Update, Salon writes, we'd like to tell you how Dana Perino responded to questions about McClellan's charge at today's White House press briefing. And we would, if only anyone in the White House press corps had asked her any. God, what were they asking Dana Perineal today? Hey, Dana, diamonds or pearls, sweetie? God, all this honey and deer and baby and sweetie, I'm afraid I'm going to come across as a sexist. Please forgive me. That's how we are in the South. You know, and Southern people, everybody. You all right, honey? Yes, dear. Sweetie, could I have a piece of that coconut pie over there? Mm-hmm, you betcha, honey. I'll be right there with it. I know it really puts some people off, so I apologize in advance. But no. Sorry. No questions by the Johnny-on-the-spot Washington press corps. The tryptophan is already doing its job. And it goes on, and oh, we got a night full of it. We have an absolute night full of excitement. Did you catch, by the way, the first installment last night of the horn section? You know, we've got a blank spot, as it were, a blank live spot between John Fox's, the beginning of John Fox's show and the end of Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold, and it seemed rather unfair, by my way of thinking, to John Fox to hang some sort of a rerun in there or turn the stream off and let the classical music roll for a little bit. And, you know, I'm just sitting here behind the microphone anyway, and, you know, in a pinch, I can open the microphone and read the Canterbury Tales if I have to. It takes a lot to make me speechless. So what I got to thinking about, what would be fun, would be if the various and sundry members of the Horn, the hosts, and for that matter anybody else associated with the organization, would jump in and sort of round table. So last night it was Peter Godbold, John Fox, and myself. And we christened it the Horn Section. And I guess that's what's going to happen from now on between the hours of 11 p.m. and midnight until somebody comes along who is capable and committed and willing to adopt that hour and make it their own. I told Guy James about the Horn Section earlier today. I would tell Mark Levine, but Mark Levine is on his Thanksgiving break. Spending time with his parents in the land of his birth, namely Nashville. But I hope he'll get involved. I'd love to see Dr. Bill involved as well. I've told horn psychologist Rick Goodner about it. We are at present trying to twist the arm of Night Sounds host Billy Shears. And as soon as I hear that he's back at school, whatever, I will tell Matt Sowards of the Sowards Report about it. I think we can have a high old fine old time with the horn section. So, you know, check it out. Some nights it may just be me. Some nights it'll be the stuff that I didn't get to, that didn't make it off the bottom, didn't get dealt from the bottom of the stack or whatever. But we will have live programming beginning at 3 p.m. and going all the way through to 1 a.m. I find that pretty cool. So, you know, the horn section, check it out. Participate if you want to. Last night's horn section, something I brought out, and just in case you did miss it, I really want to share it with you so that you've got this handy the next time you run across a fundy who wants to talk about the war on Christmas. Peter Godbold, how many days left do we have in the war on Christmas? I don't want to run out or anything. But just in case you were wondering where the war on Christmas notion came from, as it says in Ecclesiastes, I believe, there is nothing new under the sun. Every time I say it comes from Ecclesiastes, somebody tells me it comes from Isaiah, and every time I say it comes from Isaiah, somebody tells me Ecclesiastes. I'm pretty sure Ecclesiastes. There is nothing new under the sun. Or maybe Ezekiel came up with that when he saw his UFO. But no, the Republicans have never had an original idea in their lives, and they're not likely to have one anytime soon. And lo and behold, it even, you know, that stuff even rolls all the way downhill to the war on Christmas. And there it is, the origin of the war on Christmas. There's nothing new in it. It has become pretty general. Last Christmas, most people had a hard time finding Christmas cards that indicated in any way that Christmas commemorated someone's birth. God, that sounds like a press release from the American Family Association. Sounds like it could have come out just yesterday, doesn't it? Well, it didn't. That came out in 1920. 1921. It was published in Dearborn, Michigan, in a paper called The Dearborn Independent. Nobody will say Merry Christmas no more. You can't tell that it's a celebration of Jesus' birth. God Almighty, how much money did John Gibson make on that dumbass book that he wrote about the war on Christmas? How much is he going to make reissuing it this year? Well, that's not John Gibson. That's not Bill O'Reilly. No, that's Henry Ford, who went on to say, Easter, they'll have the same difficulty in finding Easter cards that contain any suggestion that Easter commemorates a certain event. There will be rabbits and eggs and spring flowers, but a hint of the resurrection will be hard to find. So we've got the war on Christmas, and we've got Easter, you can't tell that it has anything to do with the resurrection. There's a war on Easter! Who invented the complaint about the war on Christmas and the war on Easter? Henry Ford, the Dearborn Independent. In a little piece called The International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem, Chapter 36, Jewish Rights to Put Studies Out of Schools.
They're trying to chase Jesus out of the public school system.
Thank you, Mr. St. Ecclesiastes, or the Prophet Ecclesiastes, or whatever. There is nothing new under the sun. So just remember, every time you hear about the war on Christmas, that is, as so much often is, nothing more than right-wing, disgusting, bigoted, anti-Semitic code for the Jews are trying to kill Christ again. Isn't that sickening? It's enough to put you off Christmas altogether, isn't it? Sure it is. So, you know, like I said, I brought that up in the horn section last night, but I wanted to make sure it got a little, you know, we didn't put that in the rotation or anything, and I wanted to make sure it got out there. The war on Christmas is a dead lift from one of the single most hateful tracts ever authored on the American continent in the English language against Jewish people. The war on Christmas is what? Thinly veiled anti-Semitism? Crypto anti-Semitism? Do you think, and see, that's the fun thing. I'm sure the higher ups know it. I'm sure John Gibson knows it. I'm sure O'Reilly knows it. But what about the shock troops? What about the cannon fodder in the culture wars that write the letters to the editor saying, I won't buy a note from nowhere that don't say Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays? Do they know it? What if you pointed it out to them? Would it matter? I don't know. Let's go to the phones and see what's shaking there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, how are you?
Just great. I loved the horn section. I sincerely hope you're recording it.
Well, I didn't last night, but I will tonight.
Because I adored it. I did want to mention one thing.
Go
oh,
ahead.
By the way, the thing about Henry Ford, wasn't he implicated in that plot to take over the U.S. government along with Poppy Bush?
I don't know if Henry Ford was or not. I don't recall offhand.
I know he was an A-number-one fascist.
Oh, that he was. That he was. They had to pull him off Adolf Hitler with a crowbar.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was implicated. I don't know if he was implicated to the extent that Poppy was, but, you know, he's a real fun dude. Anyway, have you noticed in the news coverage that there is a major lack of coverage over the protest at what used to be known as the School of the Americas?
Yeah, that was right quiet this year, wasn't it?
Well, no, actually, they showed up with thousands of people, including Dennis Kucinich.
No, I understand that part.
Yeah.
But, you know, crickets, you know.
What?
Beep, nothing.
Yeah. Little cricket noises off, you know, and that's all you heard from the press. You know, it was like the White House press corps asking about dear old Scotty and his statements. Crickets.
Chirp.
I'm kind of listening. Randy Rhodes spent the entire show going on about the telecommunications bill that they got going. And I think she's right. We need to stop that, and then we need to reverse it so that you can't, so that you can't have such an incredible conglomeration of media, because it's this. I can remember back in the Kennedy administration, the press didn't act like that.
The press won't act like this if there's a Democrat in the White House either. The press was positively aggressive in trying to ferret out every last little detail about, you know, Bill Clinton's boxer shorts, okay?
Now, I can remember Watergate. You know, Do you really think Woodward and Bernstein would have a job today if they were going after?
Oh, I don't think they'd be doing delivery for Domino's or something, Woodward and Bernstein, because there is no interest in America in investigative journalism. Richard Nixon has got to be roasting over a spit in hell somewhere, and just, you know, muttering with every turn, "He's getting away with it. I had a real brain. I had a plan for America, and he's getting away with it."
Richard Nixon, at least, was intelligent. He was so crooked, he screwed his socks on, but he had a brain.
Well, that's a new one for me. That one's going in the book. So crooked, he screwed his socks on.
You mean I actually came up with something you could use?
That's a beautiful one. I'm hanging on to it for dear life.
Use it with my blessing. But at least Nixon had a brain. The only brain Bush has is Cheney.
And that's not so much as a brain as it is just a sort of a difference engine for coming up with pure evil.
An evil puppet master, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, the only investigative reporting that's done these days is from a guy who works from a British newspaper. He's an American, but he has to work for a British newspaper.
Yeah, the only journalism that's going on in the in America is coming out of Britain. I saw a fabulous new article from David Rose the other day. You know, David Rose has been on the program. He was one of the first ones to expose Guantanamo.
Uh-huh.
And he's writing, I believe, about, was it the prison system in the United States? I think so.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't normally watch the news, but I happen to catch part of the local news here. And it was just the tail end of the network news. And they were going on about this. They had this special report about this Serbian mental hospitals. And there was this big investigative report that I'm going, do you want to investigate something? Investigate Guantanamo? Or if you can't do that, investigate the Tijanahato Residential Detention Center?
Now, hey, there's a thought. I hadn't thought about T. Don Hutto in a while.
The
concentration camp where we keep little children that we've determined to be illegal human beings?
Yeah, I don't see anybody bringing their cameras in there because they're brown and they're in Texas.
Yepers.
And it just...
I know.
I just...
So you know what I'm talking about when I say that I'm sitting around waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Oh, yeah. I'm waiting for it to drop. Me too. And I keep looking around like, okay, when's it going to hit? And how bad is it going to hurt? Or who's it going to kill?
Well, the reason I do mention that is... where is it? The right-wing group that pushed the troop surge down our throat is, even as we speak, Susan, coming up with their focus grouping new words and testing new phrases.
For Iran.
For Iran.
I agree with Joe Biden. Impeach the son of a bitch. Pardon my language.
Joe Biden's into impeachment now?
Yeah, he even said it in that last debate.
Oh, that's right, he did.
God and everybody. And I was so proud of the dear boy.
But it wasn't what Joe Biden said still couched in terms of if then?
If he goes into Iran, impeach him.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I agree with you.
I mean, isn't there...
Completely in there.
Do we have to wait for the other shoe to drop, Susan? Isn't there enough? I mean,
I mean,
if you're just standing around and Nancy Pelosi's liquored up at the cocktail party over in the corner, and you just slide a, hey, sister, what do you say? You're a piece of son of a bitch.
Yeah, I
mean,
I was going to keep telling Donald, what does he have to do? Bend Nancy over the speaker?
Yeah!
Right, Congress?
It's too early in the evening for that, Susan, and doggone it.
I'm beginning to think that's the only way she's going to agree to impeach him.
I'm not touching that. I ain't going there. I already honeyed, sweetheart, and deared myself right out of the souls of a bunch of the women listeners to this program. I am not going to... No. But no, it's a legitimate question. And I mean, we can couch it in constitutional terms. And I think the real question is impeachment a mandatory duty? And I don't know the answer to this.
No.
Is impeachment a mandatory duty of the House of Representatives upon being presented evidence that the president is committing high crimes and or misdemeanors?
Doesn't the Constitution say the House of Representatives shall?
Might take me a minute to find it, but, you know, we can do that real quick.
Rather than may or, no, you can if you want or whatever. Last time I heard it was shall, and that means you don't have choice.
Article 1, Section 2, Clause 5. And I'm waiting for it to come up now, so, you know.
Yeah, something like First Amendment, yeah. Congress shall make no law abridging.
No, I'm sorry. Article 1, Section 3, no. Okay, Article 1, Section 2, Clause 5. The House of Representatives shall choose their speaker and other officers and shall have the sole power of impeachment. And then it... So that means it has to start. All that means is it has to start in the House.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's a philosophical argument at that point in time. Now, on the other hand, when you go to Article 2, which is the deals with the executive branch, you get this language.
Uh-huh.
The president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors.
Okay. Okay, that's a problem. Because it's conviction. Impeachment and...
But the process is separate. It says they shall be removed from office on impeachment and conviction.
Yeah, once they're impeached and convicted, they absolutely, there's no choice, out they go. But the question is, do we have an option in starting the process? Constitutional scholars could go over that one.
No, and I'm sure they have, and I'm sure they will, and it would be a lovely little debate. But it really does. It becomes a matter of philosophy after a while, Susan, because... I don't know. Let's look at other oaths of office. What happens to a member of the military who dishonors their oath?
Yeah. Archie Doe, BCD.
What happens to a member of state government, a legislator? What happens to a judge?
Yeah. Archie Doe.
You know, for the fun of it, let's say you've got a judge out there who is shaking down litigants for preferential treatment, and you catch him at it. Does the House of Representatives have the option of looking the other way, or must they take up impeachment?
I would think so. But then,
I mean, they could have looked they didn't look the other way with Alcee Hastings when they caught him.
No.
They impeached him and removed him from the federal bench, and then he got himself elected to the House of Representatives.
And they didn't look the other way when pardon me, Bill Clinton, didn't do what was even illegal.
Oh, God almighty, Susan, when it was Bill Clinton, you had Henry Hyde and Newt Gingrich and that whole filthy crowd screaming about how the flag was falling. We cannot allow the flag to be dragged through the dust by these high crimes and misdemeanors.
I never did find out what was supposed to be a high crime or misdemeanor about the whole thing.
Lying, lying.
Well, if that's the standard...
See where it gets you?
You know, if that's the standard, he needs to go, and the whole crew needs to go.
Is that what this is? Is slithering Scott McClellan begging us to impeach him? Or is this just him thumbing his nose and saying, we got away with it, we keep on getting away with it, the Democrats won't stop us, they won't even try, they're a bunch of lily-livered goomers.
I like to think that he's trying to say, do it, but I have a feeling it's the second one.
And not one member of the Washington Press Corps so much as brings it up to Dana Perineum.
And geez, I just can't believe that. Well, I can believe it, but I'm just appalled. Because what I can't understand is, haven't they made the logical leap that, okay, you want to impeach this guy now because you do have grounds, or do you want to try and impeach him after he starts World War III when the nukes start flying?
You do not have to impeach him now. You may take him home and impeach him later.
Yes, but by that time, there's a whole lot of radioactive glass, and you may be at the bottom of it. Of course, that will solve the population problem.
Depends on where.
Well, Russia still has a whole lot of U.S. cities targeted. Major U.S. cities.
Yep.
And if the nukes start flying, Russia will launch. It basically ensures self-defense. And if the nukes start flying, then China joins in. And it's going to be ugly. It's going to be a mess. And that will take care of global warming, too, because then the nuclear winter sets in. And then the next species to inherit the Earth is the cockroach.
Best of luck.
God, isn't this a cheerful conversation?
Yeah, you know, you've got me about ready to open a vein here, Susan.
I'm sorry.
Oh, brother.
I mean,
but I don't know the answers. You know, all I can do is apply the reasonable, prudent member of Congress in the same or similar circumstances.
Yeah.
In other words, if you were a member of Congress or I was a member of Congress and this information was brought to your attention, would you feel that it was incumbent and mandatory upon you to pursue the impeachment of the president?
Yes. Yes, I would. But especially when you consider the historical precedents. And I'm not talking about Clinton. I'm talking about the rare historical precedents as well. Because Clinton wasn't the only president to be impeached.
Oh, no. No, Nixon was on they were on the verge of doing it to Nixon.
Uh-huh.
And they did do it to Johnson.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. That's a no-brainer.
And so when you look at the reasons behind all of the others, and you look at Bush and what he has got, no contest.
That's where I am. But the thing is that the Democrats are so timid, they're such mice, they're so terrified that somebody might say, well, this is just payback. Well, my God, Henry Hyde has now admitted, a couple of years ago that Bill Clinton was payback for Nixon?
And that's just horse crap. I don't care what happened to Clinton. Clinton was years ago. It's done. I care about trying to salvage something from the wreckage. And that means getting Bush out of office as soon as possible. I don't care if it's only by 2 weeks.
I know.
That's 2 weeks of damage he can't do.
That's 2 weeks that he can't start World War III in. Susan, very well said, dear. I'm gonna take a break here and then bring a couple more calls online.
Okay, and try and cheer up. I'm sorry if I brought you down.
Oh no. I'm fine. I'm not uncheerful. But you know,
just don't go open a vein.
Did you ever go read that Mark Morford column about sustained outrage?
No, I don't think I did.
You owe that to yourself. I think you in particular owe that to yourself. SFgate.com, look for Mark Morford, and look for the last column or two. You'll find it. You'll know what I'm talking about.
What is it again?
Outrage fatigue. Mark Morford.
The URL.
SFgate.com.
SFgate.
Yeah, as in San Francisco. SFgate.com. Mark Morford, outrage fatigue.
Okay, thank you much.
Oh, absolutely. Bye. Talk to you soon. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
So we will take a little break and come back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn, listener-supported independent liberal radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. I don't think that's the song I wanted. You know, I'm going to do this right or not at all. Okay, we'll do that. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back. I got to learn to drive this thing.
Yoo-hoo!
Hello. Gore.
Hey, Al.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Gore.
Hello.
Hey, Al. It's the Vice President.
Mr. Gore, we need you for president.
We deserve a president we can respect.
We deserve a president we can respect. Who has experience?
And compassion.
Who is the most qualified?
Who is a proven leader?
Al Gore. Right on Iraq. Right on global warming. Right for the 21st century.
Join us at DraftGore.com and supporting Al Gore for the Democratic nomination for president.
Sign the petition at DraftGore.com.
Paid for by the committee to draft Gore. He won once. He can win again.
When I'm president, I'm going to say to members of Congress and members of my administration, including my cabinet, I'm glad that you have health care coverage and your family has health care coverage. But if you don't pass universal health care by July of 2009, in 6 months, I'm going to use my power as president to take your health care away from you. There's no excuse for politicians in Washington having health care when you don't have health care.
I'm John Edwards, and I approve this message.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. He's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shear's Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
On a hot summer night, would you offer your throat to the wolf with the red roses?
Will he offer me his mouth?
Yes.
Will he offer me his teeth?
Yes.
Will he offer me his jaws?
Yes.
Will he offer me his hunger?
Yes.
Again, will he offer me his hunger?
Yes.
And will he starve without me?
Yes.
Then does he love me?
Yes.
Yes.
On a hot summer night, would you offer your throat to the wolf with the red roses?
Yes.
I bet you say that to all the boys.
All right, so I like to time travel a little bit now and then with the bumper music. But I was looking through stuff, trying to pick stuff out, and it occurred to me, dadgummit, who knew that when the Meatloaf album came out in 1977 and that the hot summer night thingamajig, you know, Wolf with the Red Roses, who knew that Jim Steinman was writing about the Republican Party? That's what America's done. We've offered our throat to the wolf with the red roses. God. And that was a very inopportunely timed break, I must admit, and I apologize to Susan because whoever was on the phone decided not to be by the time I got to it. So, you know, I apologize. But we've offered our be-all and our end-all to the Republican Party because they, oh, we're going to keep you safe. You know, eat me. Rudy Giuliani, you know, a subject, a verb in 9/11. Terrified America. That's all there is to it. That's all. Are you afraid? I'm very afraid. Well, good. So, you know, that's what you get. And, of course, the news is coming up. And, you know, your thoughts are always welcome. You know that. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your nickel, if you've got an unlimited dialing plan, 304-658-5453. Don't be shy. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Right on. Get up to save a bit of power. You got 50,000 watts in a big acoustic tower. Security's so tight tonight. Oh, they're ready for a tussle. Gotta keep your backstage passes, 'cause your promoter has a muscle.
And so it goes.
And so it goes.
And so it goes.
And so it goes. The way it's going, no one knows.
And so it goes.
And so it goes.
And so it goes.
And so it goes. The way it's going, no one knows.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. Supreme Court agreeing to hear an appeal by the District of Columbia in favor of the city's existing handgun ban. Justices will review a ruling by a federal appeals court that struck down the D.C. law, saying that it was unconstitutional under the Second Amendment right to bear arms. It's a case that could produce the Supreme Court's first ruling in nearly 70 years concerning an American's right to bear arms. A resolution in the fight over embryonic stem cell research could be on the horizon. Human skin cells have been transformed into batches of cells that look and act just like embryonic stem cells. Researchers agree it will be years before their new technique called regenerative medicine will be used to treat patients. The United Nations is warning that a resurgence of the AIDS epidemic could occur if countries let down their guard against it. The UN AIDS agency lowered its earlier estimates of how many people are infected with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. They now say 33 million have the virus, not 40 million. Better methods of collecting data indicate that AIDS is not as prevalent as feared. Iraqi leaders warning private security firms that act outside the law that they will be dealt a firm hand. The Iraqi government opening an investigation into a shooting of a woman in central Baghdad, the latest in a string of incidences using deadly force on Iraqi civilians. In London, a man from Ghana sentenced to 33 years behind bars for helping in a botched suicide bombing plot by Al-Qaeda. That was back in July of 2005. The attacks were planned for 2 weeks after Islamist suicide bombers killed 52 people on three underground trains and a bus in London in early July. In Baghdad today, five people were killed, 11 wounded in morning attacks. The director of Iraq's Geological Survey gunned down on his way to work. In Bangladesh, rescue workers are trying to deliver food and fresh water to victims of last week's cyclone. They've been hampered by poor communication and the remote nature of the affected areas, although they now are starting to get through. Over 3,500 people have died in that deadly storm, estimates of the final death toll reaching 10,000. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science and business news next. But first, this message.
PM Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Two spacewalking astronauts wired up the International Space Station's newest room today. The newest addition to the International Space Station will keep the next shuttle back on track for early December. A new university study indicates more American women under the age of 45 are dying of heart disease. Increased obesity rates and resulting diabetes may be to blame. The corresponding death rate for men suffering from heart disease appears to have leveled off. Researchers have identified structural differences in the cortex of people's brains that suffer from migraine headaches. Neurologists are not sure whether the differences cause migraines or if the migraines cause those differences. Bayer Pharmaceutical will invest nearly $1.5 billion in an effort to better protect the environment over the next 3 years. Pollution levels will be more closely audited and more energy-efficient facilities will be built for the company. Hewlett-Packard beating Wall Street expectations by posting a jump in quarterly profit on a 28% increase in net income. Company warned investors, however, not to expect such growth to sustain itself during the next year. Light sweet crude oil trading at a record-setting $98.03 a barrel. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow up 52 points at 13,010, NASDAQ up 3 points, S&P 500 up 6. And there's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. Oh, about 5 minutes past the hour, 5.5 minutes past the hour, we begin hour number two here on Head On for this Tuesday night in this foreshortened holiday week. A little reminder, of course, there will be no programming on either Thursday or Friday. There will just be a loop. There will, however, be, and it's, you know, I think really kind of cool of Billy to be willing to do this on the holiday week. There will be a brand new Night Sounds with Billy Shears that will come your way Saturday night for the first time, Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you're tuned in for that. And tomorrow night, what are we going to do? Well, we can talk about what you're going to do for Thanksgiving, what you're thankful for, who you're thankful to. I forget who it was I was talking to in the last week or so who said, you know, doesn't the establishment of Thanksgiving somehow predicate itself on being thankful to some sort of, you know, invisible critter? And I suppose in large part that may very well be true. On the other hand, however, like I've said, I think it's an excellent opportunity to manifest and make plain how grateful we are to each other for making our families, our communities, places in which we're happy to live. Right? I hope so. So tomorrow night, I'm looking to try to find it. We're going to do our for the fourth year in a row the reading of one of my favorite pieces of short fiction. And I also got to thinking, you know, we've got our own little sort of a Christmas story sort of story, you know, a Gene Shepherd-esque story, and that is, and I will retell it, the story of going shopping for Thanksgiving dinner the night before Thanksgiving when our little tribe was quite young. It's a heck of a story. If you've never heard it before, I think you'll probably get a little bit of a giggle out of it. At least I hope you do. So that's on tap for tomorrow. What else is on tap for tomorrow? Bring it. It will, of course, be Wednesday. That means it'll be prayer meeting. And I'm sure we'll have some utterly terrifying prayer meeting stories. As I mentioned last night during the horn section, the folks over at the American Family Association, yeah, their primary concern is that Christmas is welcome again at PetSmart. PetSmart. That's right. PetSmart. Because they were after PetSmart. They were after Lowe's, too, and Lowe's and PetSmart immediately capitulated. And they won't be saying happy holidays at PetSmart. No, no, no. Jewish and Muslim dogs and cats and gerbils have to be told Merry Christmas. You gotta love these little Christmas fascists, don't you? In the chat room, our good friend Freckles says, I'm grateful to my friends and my brother and all the people I know on the net. Yeah. I'm grateful for this community that we've managed to build. I'm grateful for people that I had no idea existed, but who have enriched my life so very much just by virtue of their existence as a collection of electrons that I see in emails and I see in a chat room or that I get to speak to five nights a week and who think that it's worth their time to hang out with. That's, whoa. If you stop and let it sink in, it will humble you in a large, large way. Okay, but enough of the smarmy stuff. Enough of the sweetness and light. There are still repiglicans in our world, and it's time to get back to... What a miserable, rotten bunch of SOBs they are. One of the things I don't have to be thankful for on this Thanksgiving Day, I do not yet get to celebrate the fact that hatefulness and meanness has been driven out of this country and is not tolerated here any longer. We talk about having a tolerant culture. There's some stuff you don't tolerate. One of the things you don't tolerate is just being outright rotten. And frankly, with their filibuster of the farm bill yesterday, I think it's fair to say that, you know, the Republican Party makes Simon Legree, Ebenezer Scrooge, and the Grinch look like the Magi. You do know about the farm bill, right? That's right. The Republican Party stopped the farm bill yesterday. And yes, by no means whatsoever could anybody ever accuse the farm bill of being a perfect bill. It had many, many flaws in it. It continued to reward absentee farmers, if I understand it correctly. And it had way too much corporate welfare in it for the Monsantos and the Archer Daniels Midlands and the rest of that corporate so-called farming crowd. Not nearly enough for farmers who actually farm for a living. Among other things, there was relief in it for farmers who have had their crops devastated by drought or flood. And the Republicans filibustered it. And we, of course, being Democrats, being the sweet little kumbaya crowd that we are, let them. We just let them. Inspiring, isn't it? Not by a long shot. You know, I love to garden. My son-in-law Alex and I have already started talking about next spring when we start busting up the sod and what we're going to grow and how we're going to grow it and how much of it we're going to grow and all of that. And, you know, I love it. I just love it. I love having fresh tomatoes. I love, you know, in the spring, the first thing, you know, the little tiny green onions, and to chop up a fresh green onion in a bowl of brown beans with a big hunk of cornbread. Yum, yum. New potatoes, you know, the kind that you can put under cold running water and the skin will just scrub off of them, and you slice them and cook them in a little bit, you know, just kind of cream them. Oof. Fresh green beans, you know, don't get me started. I love it. So I have a great deal of respect and sympathy and regard for people who would dare to do that for a living and depend on the vagaries of the weather for their living. And so yesterday, or the day before, while the United States Senate and the Democrats therein sat around singing this, the Republicans were sharpening their knives.
Someone's praying, Lord. Someone's praying, Lord.
You can just see him there, can't you? Harry Reid with his magic underwear on, leading the crowd. Kumbaya! And Mitch McConnell sitting there right behind him with one of those little whetstones, just kind of drawing the knife back and forth, getting ready to sink it right between his ribs. And we turn around and we say, why did you do that? Why are you filibustering the farm bill? Why are you screwing farmers who have been devastated by flood, been devastated by drought, are being pushed right out of being able to produce the food that America needs to eat because very few Americans actually produce food anymore and the United States imports more food than it grows? Why are you doing that, Mr. Republican? And Mitch McConnell looks at him and says, because we can. Keep singing, Harry. Come on, everybody. This doesn't have anything to do with it at all. There's no shouting involved. Do we have a list? Is there a list of the stuff that would have been good for America that the Republican Party, those godless, soulless, motherless monsters in the United States Senate, is there a list of the crap that they've ruined, the stuff that they've destroyed, the harm that they've done, the hurt that they've done? And because, you know, they've done it, are you willing to sit there and say, oh, yeah, but this is going to be real tough on them in 2008 in November, and boy, we're going to have a supermajority in the Senate. Blah, 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 blah. I have an increasing difficulty equating political power or the acquisition of political power with making people suffer. And it just about pretty much pisses me off. Some farmer out on the plains who has been burnt and baked and blown away, or in the South for that matter, even a red stater, even a farmer who, you know, my basic sense of vengeance says, you know, well, you know, you voted for George Bush. Congratulations, you got him. Even those people engender some degree of sympathy in my soul. But Bush didn't have to veto this farm bill. He said he would. But he didn't have to, because the Republicans in the Senate killed it for him. Mitch McConnell said, we'll let you have a farm bill, us, you know, the minority, we'll let you have a farm bill when you let us tell you what the farm bill is going to be. And forgive me, but I'm so just blown away by the difference that is manifested in the Republican minority versus how we were as Democrats when we were in the minority. You know, when we were in the minority, we'd say, you know, we don't like that judge, and Bill Frist would stand up and say, if you don't confirm this judge and give him an up or down vote, I will break your kneecaps. I will feed you your own feet. Now vote aye on this judge. Give us what we want, or we'll take away your parking place. We won't let you into the gym anymore. You won't be able to eat in the Senate cafeteria. We're gonna spit in your face every time you look at us. Now sit down and shut up, Harry Reid. And Harry Reid said, yes, sir. Thank you, sir. May I have another, sir? And so, you know, we didn't do much in the way of being a minority and enforcing our will in the Senate. But by God, the Republicans, they know how to do that. You know, you could almost respect them if they weren't pig-lickins. We pulled up 5 votes short, as they say, of breaking the filibuster. Senator Tom Harkin, a Democrat of Iowa for whom I have had a great deal of respect in the past, had threatened to postpone action on the bill until 2009. He backed off on his threat. And now the Democrats are looking at what they need to do in order to satisfy the Republican minority so the Republican minority will let the majority do its job. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said, quote, "The Senate will pass a farm bill, that is certain, but only after an open and fair debate on the Senate floor." That means only after the majority lets the minority write the bill. That means only after the Republicans get to pack it filthy with pork for their supporters, you know, the Monsantos, the Archer Daniels Midlands, you know, the rest of the companies. Still, the Bush administration says the Senate and House versions of the bill are too expensive. What else is in the farm bill? You know, it's hard to just say, ah, well, the farm bill, and get too terribly upset about the, you know, worked up about the farm bill. But you have to understand some of the stuff that goes into it. You know what was in the farm bill? Among other things in the farm bill were $5 billion for farmers who've suffered weather-related disasters, as I described. But, and this is the huge but, the other thing that was in the farm bill, because it is, in fact, administered through the United States Department of Agriculture, and God knows the Republican Party hates this, the other thing that was in this farm bill was an increase in money for food stamps, an increase in rural communities and programs that are designed to protect environmentally sensitive farmland. And that, and you know it's true, that is why the Republican Party told the people of the United States of America that they could not have a farm bill. What else was in the farm bill? Well, deep subject. There was a provision in the farm bill that would have required something called COOL. 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 COOL stands for Country of Origin Labeling. It would mean that you, as someone who goes and buys food, would have the right, as a matter of law, to have on the label where the food came from, or the food-like substance. You know, maybe you'd actually be able to look at that tube of toothpaste, and instead of seeing distributed by, you know, yada 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 of Parsippany, New Jersey, or whatever, you'd actually see where the toothpaste was made. And when you saw China, you could put it back on the shelf because you'd say to yourself, you know, I don't want my precious lumpkin dying from kidney failure because they chose to use propylene glycol in this, you know, to cut corners. Country of origin labeling. And it's not like it was buried in the bill. It was open and above board, and the Republicans fought against country of origin labeling for all they were worth, because that was the marching order that they had received from their major corporate industrial food grid political donors. Yeah, let's talk Turkey for a minute. If you haven't already, you'll probably be buying a turkey in a day or so. And, well, if you're like me, you're actively praying, even as we speak, that your rock-solid, projectile-like frozen turkey thaws in time to get it into the oven on Thursday. Go. I dare you. Look at the packaging of your Thanksgiving turkey. See if you can tell me where your turkey came from. Do you have a Norte Americano turkey? Do you have a Chinese turkey? A Chilean, a Peruvian, an Argentine turkey? Do you have a South African turkey? How about an Indian turkey? I went to the grocery store the other day and I picked up a jar that said, you know, pickles, $1. Hey, that's a good bargain on pickles. So I pick it up and casually reading the label. Pickles designed in the United States, made in India. We ship pickles around the world on a great big steamship. And it comes in somewhere in New York or New Jersey or maybe Florida or Mobile or Houston or Los Angeles or Seattle. Pickles, you know, little kosher miniature dill pickles from India. Guess what? You spend all that time with your turkey label, you will not be able to tell me, under most circumstances, you will not be able to tell me where your turkey came from. And it is thanks to folks like Wally World, Walmart, your corporate good neighbor. Because they tightened down the screws on the Republican senators and told them, we don't want people knowing where their food's coming from. If they find out where their food's coming from, we'll go out of business. If they find out the stuff that's in their food, we'll go out of business. So Walmart tightened the screws on the Republicans, and they filibustered the 2007 Farm Bill. Because that 2007 Farm Bill would have required country of origin labeling. And I tell you what, they were so happy. Walmart was so happy. They didn't know what to do with themselves. And, you know, when the Republican senators looked at him and said, hey, guys, you know, come on. I'm going to get blistered in the election next year for that. They said, don't worry. We'll triple your money. Every dollar your opponent spends, you'll have four to spend against them. There's no way you can lose. We got your back in this. And, of course, Harry Reid stood there in the Senate and said, okay, you know, you want a filibuster, okay, that's fine by us, you know. We're big ones for playing by the rules. We don't want to be mean or nothing. I mean, we wouldn't want to be seen to be, you know, we wouldn't want to say anything ugly to you or, you know, like threaten to take your filibuster away if you don't start acting like, you know, American citizens and representatives of the American people instead of representatives of the industrial food grid lobby. No, we can't do any of that. Walmart alone buys products for more than 60,000 suppliers in 70 countries. Okay? The majority. Go walk that. You know, don't spend any money there, but just go for a walk in Wally World someday. You know, one of the super centers. Look at all the stuff there. The frozen foods, the breads, the canned goods, the meats, the cheeses. A majority That means more than 50% of all the food that you cast your eye upon in Wally World's Supercenter come from outside the United States. Oh, sure, you know, you were used to the fact that if you went to Wally World to buy a pair of jeans, you were going to see Made in India or Made in China or Made in Vietnam or Made in Kuala Lumpur. Same thing for the tennis shoes. Same thing for the socks and the underwear. You were used to that. But what about the food that you feed your family? You're okay, maybe, with putting foreign crap on your body. How about putting foreign crap in your body? Not that I want you to get the impression that American food producers are doing much better these days. After all, there's the salmonella in the green beans and E. coli and on the spinach and E. coli cook-only meat. We talked about that last week. But it really is an amazing thing to have run around in your brain to stand in Wally World and understand that more than half of everything that your eye lights on in the food, the grocery store section, comes from outside the United States, and that you don't know it. The American people aren't permitted to know it. The Johnny on the Spot Washington Press Corps, the investigative reporters at CNN and NBC and CNBC and MSNBC and CBS and Headline News and yada, 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 they're not going to do any stories on this. Because, you know, some knee breaker from the foreign food lobby will give the boss an unfriendly phone call if they try. You're not supposed to know what you're putting on your body. You're not supposed to know what you're putting in your body. You are supposed to be a compliant, quiet, quiescent little consumer who shuts up and purchases. That's your job. And so what if your turkey was raised in a turkey farm that's right next door to, say, a great big humongous Chinese ancient coal-fired power plant that just spews mercury and arsenic and lead and manganese and all manner of vile filth into the air. So what? Sit down, eat your turkey. You want the dark meat or the white? Shut up. Happy Thanksgiving. This is a quote from Wally World. Walmart expects to sell truckloads and truckloads of turkeys. So many, in fact, that the trucks would stretch the length of 194 football fields if lined back to back and weigh the same as 1,900 male elephants. Well, at least I'd know that the male elephants probably didn't happen in America. Turkeys, however, are native to the Western Hemisphere, and you just sort of assume, you know, it's Thanksgiving, it's a turkey, and, you know, there's a turkey farm somewhere in Michigan or something that, you know, that your 20-pound bird came from, and you're going to roast it, and, you know, God knows it's not as easy as it seems, and if you wait for the little red popper thing to come out, you're screwed. Imagine that. The most American of all holidays, the holiday that we share with no other country, at least not at that time of year, Thanksgiving. That most unique of American holidays. You, my brother, my sister, my friend, cannot be certain that even the turkey that you carve on Thanksgiving Day came from the United States of America. And you have the Republican Party to thank for it. Yes, you do. I'm sorry. I don't know if you're like me, but that makes my head hurt. That just blows me the heck away. A turkey. For the love of God, a turkey. And we can't even know that it came from America. And but please don't make any false assumptions. Don't think that because you don't get your turkey from Wally World that your turkey didn't come from the turkey farm next to the massively polluting ancient coal-fired power plant somewhere in China. Because country of origin labeling doesn't just apply to Wally World. It's everybody. And none of the industrial food grid producers and purveyors wanted it. The only people who wanted country of origin labeling were people like you and me and some Democratic senators. And no matter how hard those Democratic senators worked for it, the Senate Majority Leader would not stand up to Mitch McConnell, that pinch-faced, beady-eyed, bespectacled little freak from Kentucky, and tell him that actions have consequences. No, because we're going to wait for, you know, somebody to get sick off of a Chinese turkey or whatever. We're going to wait and we're going to let that happen. We'll let some Americans drop dead from E. coli or some such. Because come November of 2008, we're really going to make the Republicans pay. I don't accept that kind of political calculus. I don't accept that consolidating power is a reason to ignore the Constitution and not impeach the President of the United States when you catch him red-handed in high crimes and misdemeanors. I don't accept that any more than I accept this. And we haven't even gotten to the food stamps yet. Food stamps make Republicans want to vomit. The idea, the very idea of giving away food to Americans. Let them get out and work for it. Let them pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. $3 a day. $3 a day. That is what the average food stamp recipient gets on a monthly basis, $3 per day. Sometimes less, seldom more. $3 a day. And it might have increased to $3.02, or maybe it would have increased all the way to $3 and a dime, or heaven forfend, $4 a day in this farm bill. But here at Thanksgiving, the Republican Party said, hell no! Boggles the mind. Let's see who's on the phone. They've got a beep tone.
Hello?
Hey, who've I got?
Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you, dear?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Not feeling so good about my turkey, I guess.
Well, I'll have nails for Thanksgiving.
Nails?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, sometimes
yeah,
I feel like...
I've got to satisfy Candy. Now, can I talk about a couple of things? You were talking about the impeachment at first, so I just want to say a little something about that, and then I want to say something about something else.
You can talk about anything.
Maybe something else, even.
You can talk about anything you want to, Juanita.
Okay, I just wanted to say Lionel on Air America,
uh-huh.
He's an attorney. He said, if we don't impeach this guy, we just will take it off the books.
Yeah, well, if we don't impeach George Bush, we're never going to impeach anybody again unless
right.
It's a Democratic president who happens to have sex that Republicans don't like.
Right, right. Yeah, and I watched all that stuff, too. And Henry, who was the head of the committee? Hyde?
Yeah, Henry Hyde.
So nasty.
Yeah, he had his own affair. He had broken up a marriage on his
mm-hmm.
own.
But yeah, but he was young then. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Youthful indiscretion.
Right, right.
And something I said the other day I'd like to discuss about Hannity. I said he was scum.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like to say things about people like that without a good reason. But there's one thing. Did you ever see the documentary that someone made about these two college students in Utah decided to invite Michael Moore to speak to the college?
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see that documentary?
Yeah.
Well, those people, that was something else. But the way that, they invited, was his name, and Hannity, and all you got to pay is my way. Of course, that cost a lot more than Michael Moore did. But when he got up before the audience, you know, and said, is there any liberals in the audience? He said, here, Libby, Libby, Libby. Mm-hmm. You know, he was so condescending.
Well, he's a demagogue.
It's one thing about him. And I used to listen to Fox News.
Right.
Fox. Because, you know, there wasn't anything else to watch much of. And I watched it till I got sick. I literally got sick. And so anyway, I very seldom will I look at anything on there because I had enough of it. And you were talking about all the food anymore. You don't even know what's in vegetables. They're making hybrids and putting all kinds. They're even talking about putting some kind of human stuff in some of the vegetables.
Ugh.
Well, that's just going to, you know, we'll be like the cows. We'll be cannibals.
Well, yeah. And you know, look, Juanita, whether it's E. coli, and I've explained enough times where E. coli comes from that the mere mention of the word at this point should make people think poop.
Yeah.
You know, E. coli on spinach, E. coli on lettuce, E. coli, yeah. Anytime the word E. coli and a vegetable are brought up in a sentence together, you know that your food,
mm-hmm.
the food in question, has been exposed to feces.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just can't get around it. There's no pretty way to talk about that.
Uh-huh.
I wish there was, because personally, it grosses me out.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, when you were talking about the meat the other day, I had to turn you off. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Well, you know, some of this
stuff.
Can't make some of this stuff pretty, Juanita.
No, I know it's not, but I know so much already, and I just, you know, I thought, I don't need to do it anymore. Because I do know that, I mean, we've probably eaten human beings, and we just don't know it. I'm sure we've eaten dogs and cats.
Oh, there's a whole list of stuff you've eaten and really don't want to know.
We've eaten everything and don't know it. And you know, I just, you just have to just try not to really concentrate on what you might have eaten.
Well, that's the approach I take whenever I have a hot dog.
Oh, yeah, me too, and I eat a lot of hot dogs lately.
I love Hebrew Nationals, things like that, because, you know, as hot dogs go, at least those things are fairly clean.
Yeah, right, kosher, yeah.
Because they're really meticulous about them, or so they say. But still, you know, the entire food supply is corrupted.
Oh, yeah, everything. And everything to make things cost more money for us, too. You know, like the cars. Who killed the electric car?
Right.
You know, and like hemp, I believe you were talking the other day about it could be really cheap fuel and not pollute to have hemp.
Mm-hmm.
Were you the one talking about that?
No, that was I mentioned it some, but it was largely a subject that was brought up by John Fox. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't know that. And then I think somebody said something about hemp bags.
Right. You can make, you know, you can make paper out of it a lot more easily than you can out of, you know, pulp pine wood.
You ever go in a college lab and see all the wasted paper?
Oh, gosh, yes.
you know, I mean,
I worked
in any office or any place.
I worked in a newsroom, Juanita. I worked in a newsroom. Nobody wastes paper like a writer does.
Oh yeah. And our printing, you know, just all kind of. And to me, if they. Yeah, I guess you could use like the wood out of the forest for making beautiful things, you know, like maybe even building homes. But when you could have hemp and use that for the scrap and it's beautiful paper, there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, there's a Juanita, you might find this kind of interesting. I think you like history and things like that. There is in South Central Tennessee, at a place called Mount Pleasant, or near Mount Pleasant, an old pre-Civil War mansion. And the name of that mansion is Rattle and Snap. And
Rattle and what?
Rattle and Snap. It's named after a game of chance, which is how they won. And it's the, you remember the president, James K. Polk?
Well, sort of.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's before.
He's before
both our time, Juanita, no doubt about it. But Rattle and Snap.
Not too far before mine, but anyway.
Oh, come on, take it easy.
Yeah.
Well, Rattle and Snap, if I understand my history correctly, you know, we tend to think of antebellum Southern plantations as, you know, having raised cotton or tobacco. This place raised acre upon acre upon acre of what was called sisal, S-I-S-A-L. And sisal...
Oh, yes, I know that from puzzles.
Sisal is another word for hemp.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And a whole lot of the hemp that was needed for the sisal ropes that were used by the United States Navy and the United States Army and the Marine Corps and so forth, all of that came from this plantation.
Uh-huh.
And the wealth of that family, you know, I mean, they were still slave owners and you know, yeah. But their wealth was built on hemp.
On lumber.
Hemp.
Oh, hemp, yeah.
And it's fascinating. If you look up Rattle and Snap in the Google, you will see an absolutely stunning, I mean breathtaking, antebellum mansion.
Uh-huh.
And to look at that and realize that was made, that fortune that supported that plantation was made with slave labor.
Yeah.
Growing not cotton, not tobacco.
Yeah.
But hemp.
Yeah.
Blows your mind.
Well, it could certainly happen today. But see, that would make sense. That would make sense. And we can't have that.
No.
That would help us. And we can't have that.
Right, because there's a fortune being made in synthetics. All these oil byproducts for the plastics and the nylons and the rayons and the this-ons and the that-ons.
And I said the
hemp I don't know. I'm having trouble with your phone connection there.
Me too.
But I don't... The stuff it biodegrades. It doesn't harm the soil. It doesn't. It just makes entirely too much sense. But you know.
Well, I think I heard that the rope. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, I got you fine.
Okay, I think that the rope. They said it was last longer than the other kind. You know, was a lot better and all.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I understood.
Would not surprise me in the least.
But anything, you know, there's so many things they could do, like solar, use of solar and the use of wind, but no, they got to dig up the ground and they got to get all that stuff out.
Well, if you had the opportunity, Juanita, would you pay a little bit extra on your power bill to have power that you knew did not come from nuclear or coal or any fossil fuels?
Well, my light bills are so high. But I would, you know, I would rather pay it for that, you know, than what I'm paying for, because I get very little for my money.
Yeah, and just to know that you're not hurting anybody else by turning your lights on. There's a lot to be said for that.
Oh, yeah. And maybe even helping somebody else.
Right.
You know, did you, I heard too, like when Jimmy Carter was, you know, he had like the hot water heater panels.
Right.
On the White House. And when Reagan came in, he had them take them off.
That's true.
Then our country virtually gave up on the solar power, and the Europeans took it over, and they took it up, and they're using it.
I think
in Germany and some of the other.
All over Europe, frankly, all over the world except the United States.
Oh, yeah.
The first two things, and this is always so, you know, the right-wingers and Republicans hate it when you tell them this or you remind them of this because... It's such an indictment. The first two things that Ronald Reagan did when he got into office in January of 1981, he removed the solar panels from the roof of the White House.
Yeah.
And the other thing he did was to tax waitresses' tips.
Oh, okay. Well, and he fired the people, you know, so that...
Oh, the air traffic controller. Yeah, I don't know where these people get the idea that he was a great man. He was a monster.
Well, I don't either. You know, they think he's like God or something, even more so than Bush sometime, I think. But you know, I'll tell you one thing that got me about him was that one of the things I really remember was, remember Chavez, the migrant worker?
Union? Yeah, Cesar Chavez.
Okay, Chavez. Well, you know, they had the grape strike, and he goes out there, and he sits down and starts eating grapes. Now, wasn't that something? Wasn't that something for him to do?
Well, but that's an important symbolic gesture?
Uh-huh. And he also opened his... run for president in the town where those three guys got buried, you know.
Oh, you know, he did a million things. He put a wreath on a Gestapo
right.
man's grave in Bitburg, Germany. He delivered a speech in the town where the Klan was born. I mean, gee whiz.
Yeah. But,
yeah, I know.
But he was the greatest, is what they said.
No, he's Saint Reagan.
But, you know, it's just, you think about it, everything is for money. And that's why I love the verse in the Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. And when you think about different things, usually that's what it is. And the ones you don't know about, they probably are. It probably all boils down to, I'm sure either that or power, and money is power.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, money is a free speech, too, you know.
Well, yeah, according to the Supreme Court, yeah, money's speech.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know, and also the corporations are people. They got more rights.
The vast majority of civil rights suits that are filed or lawsuits that are filed claiming violations of civil rights in this country aren't filed by African Americans or Asian Americans or even Caucasian Americans. They're filed by American corporations claiming that the government is violating their civil rights.
Yeah. I can believe it. And what was the first thing that Bush did when Gore challenged the election? This was before the final decision. He went straight to the Supreme Court. And a lot of people don't know that. But he did. And they turned it down. They said, oh, let them decide. But see, we were under a barrage of threat because we had a Republican Senate, House of Representatives here in Florida. We'd had them for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because Childs, who was our governor, you know, before Bush, he was trying to get minimum wage raised. He was trying to get to health care for people who were working that didn't have insurance, and they could pay, you know, a certain amount according to their income. And they would never let him do those things. And anyway, then we were under constant threat of if one didn't do it, you know. So finally, the Supreme Court did it. and they didn't go as far as to go into the Congress and Senate, but they were ready to say, hey, you know, Bush is our guy. So it was really going all around, and we had all kind of trials. They were going to the different counties that Gore was wanting to have them recount.
No, I know.
Huh?
I know. Yeah.
They weren't getting too far on that, so then they had one hearing for everything. And we had, I said, oh, well, they got a Democratic judge. Well, he was one of those blue, blue, blue dog.
Yeah, what I call a mug
judges. And, of course, he was the one that had all of those votes that hadn't been counted to be driven, like a la O.J., to be driven up to Tallahassee.
Right.
And put in some library up there, which Jeb tried to destroy. And I don't know, I don't think anybody knows what happened to all those votes.
Well, interestingly, though, the consortium study did finally come out shortly after 9/11, and lo and behold, it said if every vote had been counted, Al Gore would have been the president of the United States. There's no doubt that election was stolen.
They were counting. Our Supreme Court here in Florida has said, yes, go ahead and count them. And we were in the middle of having them counted when the Supreme Court said stop the counting.
Right.
And that was
And I'll never forget the grounds that George Bush relied upon, that irreparable harm would be done to George Bush if the votes were counted.
Uh-huh. Well, at least he didn't say anything about us.
Well, that's because, you know, we don't matter.
Yeah. And what was so aggravating, and people talk about James Baker. He was so heavily involved in that, I just hated to see him come on the TV. Because he was really his spokesman.
I know.
I watched all that stuff. I watched all of that Clinton impeachment thing. And you couldn't watch TV without that. It was just over and over and over and over again.
Yep, beat you across the head with
everywhere. And, of course, I didn't know that at the time, I didn't know that Falwell had put out some kind of a little movie.
The Clinton Chronicles.
Yeah, and he was a drug kingpin.
Oh, drug, Mina Airport.
All these murders, and then you had Starr come along, you know, and he invested all that stuff, investigated.
No, that was
stuff.
The whole thing was just a. We know now from having seen all the scandals that have broken about the Republicans, Juanita, we know what a passion that they have for pornography and filth.
Uh-huh.
And that's all they were interested in, you see. They were getting their prurient kicks by looking around by looking at smut and
did
calling
you read
it government.
My little thing I wrote.
I did.
Back in
I did.
2006. I really believe that. It's kind of like and I can't remember the significance of that date for some reason. I was looking up in my old files for some different things, and I sent you about three different things. But then I thought, that last one I sent you, I thought, he's going to think I'm terrible. But anyway, I'm going to, okay, say this, and then I'm going to let you go.
Yeah, it's news time, so.
I just want to say one more thing.
Sure.
Have you ever wondered if Starr, Kenneth Starr and McConnell and Rove and who's the guy, the head of the Family Center, you ever wonder if they're all out of the same back, so
yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying?
You know,
my favors.
And and there's, you know, there's a lot of rumors going around that eventually Mitch McConnell will be outed.
I can believe it. And his little wife, I could swear Clapper.
Oh, she's just evil. She's just evil.
She's something else, yeah.
Juanita, best of luck as you continue the home repairs, and dial in any time, okay?
Okay, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
For the real Thanksgiving.
Precisely. And even if the turkey's, you know, Chinese.
Right.
All right.
As a friend of mine says, pray over it.
Pray over it, indeed. Take care, Juanita.
Okay, you too.
Bye now. All right. So let's go do some news. What do you say? You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. Independent media, listener-supported. The Horn. Chime right in if you've got a bee under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle. Bad for you to keep that stuff bottled up. We'll be back.
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. Supreme Court agreeing to hear an appeal by the District of Columbia in favor of the city's existing handgun ban. Justices will review a ruling by a federal appeals court that struck down the D.C. law, saying that it was unconstitutional under the Second Amendment. It's a case that could produce the Supreme Court's first ruling in nearly 70 years concerning an American's right to bear arms. The United Nations is warning that a resurgence of the AIDS epidemic could occur if countries let down their guard. The UN AIDS agency lowering its earlier estimates of how many people are infected with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. They now say 33 million have the virus, not 40 million. Better methods of collecting data indicate that AIDS is not as prevalent as feared. A resolution in the fight over embryonic stem cell research could be on the horizon. Human skin cells have been transformed into batches of cells that look and act just like embryonic stem cells. Researchers agree it will be years before their new technique called regenerative medicine will be used to treat patients. The world's top diplomats will soon receive a letter from Iran's foreign minister arguing the case for the Iranian nuclear program as peaceful and not a burgeoning atomic threat. The letter was published in Farsi by the Iranian state news agency, insisting that all Iran's nuclear activities are based on the United Nations Nuclear Charter and the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Exclusive invitations have gone out to several top diplomats being asked to attend next week's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland. Among those invited are leaders Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Iraqi leaders warned private security firms that act outside the law that they will be dealt a firm hand. The Iraqi government opened an investigation into a shooting of a woman in central Baghdad, the latest in a string of incidences using deadly force on Iraqi civilians. And south of Baghdad, a coalition forces helicopter crashed today, killing 2 soldiers and injuring 12. U.S. military officials say the crash was not the result of enemy fire. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science and business news just ahead. But first, this message.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for. Quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping. Charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
The crush of working families needing assistance for the holidays has put a strain on the nation's food banks and soup kitchens. An unprecedented scarcity of donations, meaning many groups are canceling Thanksgiving dinners and food baskets. Traditionally, this week is one of the busiest for U.S. air travel. 27 million Americans will fly during the Thanksgiving week. Fog, rain, and snow in the East and Midwest have meant delays at the largest airports from O'Hare to LaGuardia to Atlanta. In France, civil servants, teachers, and hospital staff today joined transit workers on strike, at least for 24 hours. The nationwide strike, now in its second week, costing the country an estimated $500 million daily. Bayer Pharmaceutical will invest nearly $1.5 billion in an effort to better protect the environment over the next 3 years. Pollution levels will be more closely audited and more energy-efficient facilities will be built. Hewlett-Packard beat Wall Street expectations by posting a jump in quarterly profit on a 28% increase in net income. Light sweet crude oil trading at $98.03 a barrel, gold at $791.40 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 52 points to end at 13,010, NASDAQ up 3, S&P 500 up 6. And there's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. You know that I am following... Well, let's back up a minute. If you were listening to our good friend Guy James earlier today, you know that he made mention of this business of Mike Huckabee. I'm sorry, all these little reptilian-brained repiglicans sort of run together. Rick, Mike, George, Frank, Rudy, John, whatever. But if you were listening to Guy James earlier today, you know that he made mention of the story whereby Mike Huckabee, who is in fact an ordained Baptist minister, compared his campaign in Iowa and himself to Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. Yes, 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 he did. He was asked a question about how he was able to maintain a campaign on as little money as he had been able to raise as compared with the money that, say, Mitt Romney, you know, the guy with the magic underwear who combs his hair with a fork, had made, you know, like $10 million. And there's poor little Mike Huckabee with only $1 million. Only $1 million. Remember that. Only. Only $1 million. And Mike Huckabee went on to... describe, he said, well, you know, it's like the miracle of the little boy and the fishes, where you just hope you got enough fishes and biscuits to make them go around, and it's a miracle, or some such tripe as that. And he was immediately called on it, A, because he's supposedly a minister of the gospel, and there he was comparing himself to Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. And it's not the miracle of the little boy and the fishes. Unless the little boy you're referring to is, you know, again, Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. And, you know, I find that just repugnant. Now, I am not a participant in any faith that calls itself Christian, because I don't see them as having anything to do with Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. It's rather like what Gandhi said. I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They're so unlike your Christ. So, I heard that listening to Guy this afternoon. And if you're not listening to Guy, why don't you just put it on the horn and just leave it go all day? Turn it off when you leave work and turn it on when you get home or whatever. Certainly better than anything you're going to get on TV, especially with the writer's strike going on. Not that the writers, bless their souls, were actually elevating the American intellect in any recognizable fashion. So, that comparison of the mundane, you know, a filthy political campaign to a miracle that was allegedly performed 2,000 years ago for people who were lame, blind, sick, suffered from leprosy, you know, the general laundry list of malaise in that hellish part of the world 2,000 years ago. Comparing those two things is just repugnant. And it makes a mockery of the Christianity that somebody like Mike Huckabee claims to profess. Well, I got another one for you. And you know that I am a sports geek. Not all sports. I think if I ever had a chance to really get serious about it, I could enjoy NHL hockey. But I was born and raised in Alabama, and hockey was a noise you made when you had a bad sinus infection. The NFL doesn't do much for me anymore. You know, really, to me, it's the no-fun league. NBA basketball, I'd just as soon have my toenails ripped out as watch. But college football and college basketball, I can, and Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball, I can get real geeky about real quick. And the PGA to a certain extent. And I'm particularly geeked out this year because if my beloved West Virginia Mountaineers, even though they're funded by the fiends of coal, it's my alma mater and I have a warm place for them. If they can manage not to screw up between now and the end of their season, which means the coming two Saturdays, both home games against Connecticut and Pitt, they'll finish the season 11-1 and have as legitimate a right as any other team in the country to demand a place in the national championship title game. So I'm pretty excited. And I sit and watch the game sort of, you know, with my, you know how it is when you're expecting disaster and you kind of put the crook of your elbow over your eyes and you peek out from under them. See, if we had video, you'd see me doing this right now. And you kind of peep out. I used to joke that my dad and I watched college bowl games, you know, with blankets over our heads, waiting for disaster to strike our beloved Mountaineers. Well, what's all this got to do with a liberal conversation radio program, you might ask? Well, I'm going to answer. I'll tell you. Because what it has to do is this. I didn't like Mike Huckabee comparing himself to Christ Jesus. And I don't like, and perhaps like even less, a football coach who basically minimizes the horror of September 11th, 2001. If you don't follow college football, you might be hard-pressed to fully grasp what I'm getting at here. And, of course, you know, having been raised in Alabama, I grew up a Crimson Tide fan as well as the West Virginia Mountaineers. my father loathed the University of Alabama. He loved to watch Bear Bryant lose because it was such high tragedy. But I did grow up a Crimson Tide fan. And if there is a more obnoxious set of self-important football fans in this nation, I don't know who it would be. So last year, after a so-so season, the University of Alabama fired its football coach, a man by the name of Mike Shula, and yeah, that means that Shula. He's Don Shula's son. He played quarterback for the Crimson Tide. And he was unceremoniously thrown out on his ear because he hadn't produced a national championship in 4 years, never mind the fact that Alabama had been on probation for various and sundry, you know, dirty deeds done dirt cheap. And the University of Alabama went casting about trying to find a top-shelf football coach who would be guaranteed to bring them back to the glory days of Paul Bear Bryant. That search yielded up one Nick Saban, son of Lou Saban, who had produced a national championship for Louisiana State University and had then basically left that university high and dry and gone off to try his hand in the pro ranks with the Miami Dolphins, where he was a howling non-success. So for the princely sum of something on the order of $28 million. Remember, we're talking about a university here. We're talking about an institution whose first mission is supposedly the extended education of young minds. The University of Alabama system and Board of Trustees agreed to pony up $28 million on a 4 or 5 year contract for Nick Saban. Life has not been kind to Nick Saban this season. They lost to LSU. They lost to Mississippi State. They lost to Florida State. A couple of others. And now they are facing Auburn, whom they haven't beaten in 3 or 4 years. And losing to Auburn at Alabama is just about, well, it's on a par with religious heresy. It's right up there, you know, losing, for an Alabama fan, losing to Auburn is right up there with denying Christ. You just can't conceive of it. But the worst came along this past Saturday. I promise, this is going to make sense, even for you people who hate sports. The worst came about this past Saturday when at Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, the Crimson Tide teed it up against a humble little school from the Sun Belt Conference called the University of Louisiana Monroe. This was supposed to be a mop-up job. This was supposed to be a boat race. But instead, the University of Alabama took its own field, its home field, and proceeded to mail it in and stunk up the joint in front of 92,000 rabid Crimson Tide fans who were so nonplussed by the performance of the University of Alabama football squad that they didn't even wait until the game was over to boo them. They booed them going into the locker room at halftime. By the time the game was over and the final gun sounded and the final score showed on the scoreboard, University of Louisiana Monroe 21, University of Alabama 14. Well, the clock hadn't even ticked down to zero before the University of Alabama Crimson Tide football team left the sidelines and headed for the locker room. Not even so much as a fellowship of Christian athletes meeting on the center of the field and good game, good game, good game. No, they tucked their tails and got their asses booed off the field. I promise this is going to make sense. Now, to me, I giggled when I saw that, because anybody that spends $4 million on a football coach deserves somewhere along the way to have their ass handed to them by the University of Louisiana Monroe just to sort of keep the natural order of things in the universe in their rightful places. The ancient Greeks identified that concept as hubris. Well, it's not going over very well with the Alabama faithful. I checked out some of the message boards and newspaper stories on Sunday morning just to sort of get a glimpse, as my father used to, of the high tragedy that is a University of Alabama football loss. And, I mean, it was ugly. Things like, we paid $28 million to get beat 21-14 by Louisiana Monroe. Heck, Mike Shula could have done that. That sort of thing. Really bitter. Really, really misplaced priorities. This is Alabama, of course, talking about the Farm Bill a little bit ago. This is one of the places that was burned up by drought this last summer, where crops just withered in the fields for want of rain, where cattle farmers are having to sell off their herds because they don't have the hay to get them through the winter. But the real venom and vitriol was reserved for losing a football game to a perceived inferior. Well, that brings us to the pep talk delivered by $28 million football coach Nick Saban. He said during his weekly news conference, and I quote here, by the time I'm done, don't be near anything glass because you're going to want to put a brick through it or something. This is what Nick Saban said at his press conference. Quote, changes in history usually occur after some kind of catastrophic event. It may be 9/11, which sort of changed the spirit of America relative to catastrophic events. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II or whatever. And that was a catastrophic event. And Nick Saban proceeded to equate the University of Alabama's defeat by the University of Louisiana Monroe this past Saturday, the 17th of November, with 9/11 and with Pearl Harbor. Please understand, I am just sickened by the repeated usage by Rudy Giuliani of 9/11 as a reason to elect him president. I have long been nauseated, well past healing, by the persistent use by the Bush administration of September the 11th, 2001, as some sort of benchmark of their competence. But I really guess that I hadn't plumbed the full depth of disgust that I could feel for someone waving the bloody shirt of September the 11th, 2001, until I got up this morning and saw this Associated Press story on the SportsIllustrated.com website. Holy cow. Now, football spokesman Jeff Purington had to come running out as soon as those bats flew out of Nick Saban's mouth. And he explained, and I quote, "What Coach Saban said did not correlate losing a football game with tragedy. Everyone needs to understand that. He was not equating losing football games to those catastrophic events. The message was that true spirit and unity become evident in the most difficult of times. Those were two tremendous examples that everyone can identify with." Jeff Purington, buddy, I don't know how much they're paying you there at the U of Alabama, there at what we lovingly refer to as the Capstone, and whereat I was once upon a student, once upon a time. But, buddy, they didn't pay, apparently, no matter how much they're paying you, they never got around to teaching you the first law of wholes, Mr. Purington, Jeff, buddy, pal, my friend. Because, Mr. Purington, my friend, the first law of wholes says when you're in one, stop digging. Because you didn't make your boss's words any more palatable. And the whole, you know, the whole reference to 9/11 and Pearl Harbor is pretty obnoxious. I think about that memorial in Pearl Harbor, that white curved memorial that sits over the sunken remains of the USS Arizona. I think about the fact that the USS Arizona remains the only sunken American warship that remains commissioned. Because she still has her crew aboard, and you cannot decommission a warship until it has been relieved of its crew. A permanent oil slick rises from the bottom of Pearl Harbor, where the Arizona rests with her crew. Just as it has every day since that day that will live in infamy, December 7th, 1941, at approximately, 7:30 in the morning Honolulu time? When flags were first being raised, reveille first being blown, mamas, daddies, children headed off to church on a Sunday morning, when Japanese torpedo planes and bombers and fighters swept in on a military that was caught unawares, on the folks who made the Navy go, the seamen first class, the seamen second class, the seamen third class, the chief petty officers, and sent the USS West Virginia, the USS Tennessee, the USS Oklahoma, the USS Utah, the USS Nevada, the USS West Virginia to the bottom of Pearl Harbor, and most horrifically, the USS Arizona. That's the kind of thing that runs through my mind when I read the comments of a $28 million football coach who thinks getting his ass handed to him on a Saturday afternoon is the same as the beginning of a world war. Alabamians are a pretty patriotic lot. My best friend's father was in the D-Day invasion. There are a lot of those people there. I wonder if they will tolerate this from Nick Saban. If I was the president of the University of Alabama, it would be a no-brainer. I would pick up the phone. I would call Coach Nick Saban and say, "Buddy, you're out of a job." and don't try to sue us on your contract because you just violated the morals clause. Changes in history usually occur after some kind of catastrophic event. It may be 9/11, which sort of changed the spirit of America relative to catastrophic events. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II, or whatever. And that was a catastrophic event. All this in preparation for discussing the coming game Saturday, commonly referred to as the Iron Bowl, down on the plains of Lee County, Alabama, not far from Opelika, at Jordan-Hare Stadium at Auburn University. Yes, I am an alumnus of the University of Alabama. Yes, I am a fan of the Crimson Tide. But no, it would not bother me one iota if the Crimson Tide never won another football game as long as Nick Saban remains the head coach there. Do you remember when Ward Churchill made his comment about Little Eichmann's relative to September 11th? He was basically quoting Hannah Arendt's work. And right-wingers from Alabama to Idaho cried out for him to be flayed alive and his beating heart ripped out of his body in the public square so that they could watch and enjoy. I am waiting to see what the response of the right-wingers is to Nick Saban. By the way, I have a reason for feeling an especial level of shame. It is, I think the word that Kurt Vonnegut coined for this sort of thing is FOMA. It's a sort of fake relationship that is only perceived but doesn't actually exist. Maybe it was a Granfaloon. Maybe it was a Wompeter. I can't remember. But I think it was FOMA. I have a particular reason for being especially disgusted with this comment because you know how dearly I love this state where I live. These hills, these hollers, their streams, their people. Nick Saban is a West Virginian. And I grieved. Lord God, I grieved when I saw that today, and I thought, you know, I can't get away with telling this story and not telling them that Nick Saban's a West Virginian. We take pride in our successes, and we also point out our failures. A Saban spokesman, that would be Mr. Purington, said the coach chose the 9/11 and Pearl Harbor references to illustrate the challenges facing his team. You know, it's so funny. I wish we were doing video right now. I lit a cigarette. But I've got my little butane lighter in my hand, and I just noticed that in the course of describing this story to you, I have gripped it almost to the point of I fear I would burst it, and my knuckles are absolutely gone white. Because it's not just the comparison of 9/11 and Pearl Harbor to a football game. It's the extra stuff he said. 9/11, which sort of changed the spirit of America. You know, that's like the Great Fire of London sort of creating a housing crisis. That's like an earthquake sort of making the earth move. So there's that. But then the heart of it is the heart of it. Oh, Jesus, the heart of it is the Pearl Harbor part. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II. Well, there's the kind of part, and that goes through me like a knife. I don't often have occasion to say that I'm glad my dad's not around. I'm glad my dad's not around for this one. Because that would have, it would have killed him. It would have flat killed him. I would have read this story, and I would have had to hang out in the house, and every time he tried to click over to ESPN, I'd have, hey, Dad, look at that, and bang, back to the fashion channel. Oh, Dad, I'm sorry, all the newspapers were sold out today. You can't, nope. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II. And then the other reference to World War II. Pearl Harbor kind of got us ready for World War II, or whatever. You know, the massacre of American POWs at Malmedy, or whatever. You know, the rape of Nanking, or whatever. You know, the dropping of atomic weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, or whatever. You know, the Battle of the Bulge, and the Siege of Bastogne, and General McAuliffe telling a German commander nuts when he was demanded to surrender, or whatever. The landing at Anzio, or whatever. The Battle of El Alamein, or whatever. My two uncles that I never got to know because they were long asleep under 6 feet of earth. Or whatever. God damn you, Nick Saban. The University of Alabama says it's a university that prides itself on its tradition and its honor. If it has any honor, Nick Saban should be out of a job as of about 12 hours ago. Newsflash, he ain't. And he won't be. Because he needs to take the University of Alabama on to a national championship. Or whatever. Let's see if this person I have unfortunately made to wait is still with us. Nope, that's a busy signal. So, you know, pardon my little sports moment tonight. I've had a lot of fun watching the national championship chase this year because it's been a heck of a college football season. And college football has changed because now the Woody Hayeses and Bo Schembechlers and Bear Bryants of the world can't just snap up every kid with an ounce of talent and sit them on the bench to make sure nobody else gets them. Real parity has come to the game now. And yeah, Appalachian State can go to Ann Arbor and beat mighty Michigan. And yeah, Louisiana Monroe can go to Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama. And once humble Kentucky can take out LSU in triple overtime. And the former laughingstock of the Big 12 can be 10-0. For the first time ever in its history. The last time it was 9-0, Kansas, was 1909. For somebody who enjoys the game, it's pretty fun to watch. But then along comes a dirtbag and a bigot and an egomaniac like Nick Saban and spits on the grave of my relatives and the fathers and grandfathers
of my friends. And the memories of heroism and sacrifice. And trivializes the most horrific day in the recent memory of the United States of America. You know, I've probably done more with this story than I should have. But I'll be damned if I was going to let the night go by and not share this with you. So, you know, you tell me. If you were the president of the University of Alabama, would you have picked up the phone the minute you heard the words and just gotten rid of this horse's ass? And if you wouldn't have, why not? What I think I'm trying to get at is that there is an institutional, you know, I started out the program this evening saying I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. Every blessed day, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. I read stories like that and I wonder if it's already dropped. I wonder if, you know, the curtain's already been rung down and I just don't see it. Are we just perma-screwed when we tolerate that kind of stuff? Yeah, oh, free speech, sure. He can say whatever dumbass things he wants to say. But Lord, do the people of the state of Alabama have to pay him to say them? Does he get a nickname from now on? Pearl Harbor Saban? Sorta Saban? Kinda Saban, whatever Saban, or we'll all be forgiven next season if he can just go 12-0 and return a national championship to the capstone. What's less, will it all be okay if he can just beat Auburn this Saturday? And you know, as a coach, he engages in recruiting. It's not like the pros where you draft out of college. He's got to have assistant coaches who go hither, thither, and yon, looking at every last player, at every last little 1A high school at, you know, Busted Knuckle Junction, because I heard they got a hell of a tailback down there. And you go in and you sit in Mama and Daddy's living room and you say, you know, we're going to take care of your boy. He's got a lot of talent. We'd be mighty proud to have him in the program. Because, you know, you found out that he runs a 4.35 40. And that kind of speed just doesn't come down the pike every day. And that recruit, you think about the kid on the team who was second string, who didn't run the 4.35 40, but ran the 4.66 40. And there's no capstone in his future. No, when graduation was over, he had one choice. So he made the call to the recruiter and he signed up, and the next thing you knew, there was a guy in full dress uniform on a porch somewhere in some little corner county of Alabama, gloves in his hand, saying, "Ma'am, I'm sorry to be here. I hate to have to tell you this." And you know, I guess in Nick Saban's world, that would sort of upset the parents or whatever. All this stuff has more meaning than what we attach to it immediately. I read this story this morning and sat there and went, holy. And then I read it again and I read it again and I read it again, and it kept just burrowing into my head like some sort of icky thing from a Star Trek movie, you know, the one where Chekhov says, "Captain, it was terrible. They put things in our ears." And by the time I get around to 6 p.m. Eastern time and I've got it in the stack and I'm saying to myself, you know, I'm not going to let this one go because, no, it's not Scotty McClellan saying that, you know, he admits that he participated in misleading the American people and that, you know, he had the president and the vice president doing the arm twisting on him to make him do it. And that those two suborned and connived at giving false statements to the American people. No, it's not on the same level with that. It's not an impeachable offense. Of course, if it was an impeachable offense, I'm sure that Nancy Pelosi would tell us that impeachment was off the table for Nick Saban because she wanted to consolidate power for 2008. No, it's none of that. But sometimes there are stories that reveal a sort of snapshot of our national character. And I think this is one of those. When $28 million buys you the right to stand in front of a bunch of beat sports reporter from the Birmingham News and the Tricycle Daily and the Anniston Gazette and the Huntsville Times and the Montgomery Advertiser and blithely tell these sports reporters that losing to the University of Louisiana Monroe is almost as awful as a sneak attack on Pearl Harbor or a terrorist attack on the Commercial Center of New York and the Defense Center of Washington, D.C. That's what 28 million big ones will buy you in America. So I hope I haven't worn the thing out and you're free to tell me to move on. But sometimes it just... just kind of crawls all over you. Let's check out who's on the phone here. Hi, who have I got?
Hey there, Ben Burge.
Hey, Ben. How are you?
Oh, I am in a world of pain.
I didn't tell anybody on the air about what went down. I figured you might want to do it yourself. I don't like to gossip.
Oh, yeah, I was going to get some coffee this afternoon and stepped on the dog dish. And I wound up doing like a ballerina tile style split all the way to the ground. Just straight down. And I'm telling you, when I played football and rugby and fence years ago, I couldn't do that. And I thought I had broken my hip. And it felt like it. And they got me to the ER, and after a long wait, they finally got me some pain meds and got some x-rays, and it turns out I just sprained everything in the back of my leg.
You know the old saying, in many instances, a sprain is far worse than a break.
Oh, yeah, I know, because back when I had my car wreck, what happened to me was I dislocated both feet.
Ow.
What they call a subcalar dislocation, where both feet were dislocated and laying on their side interior to the leg.
Yeah.
And that was pretty bad. I couldn't walk for 7 months.
This was worse?
No, this just hurts.
Well, did they give you some good pain meds to help, or?
I am right now on 30 milligrams of Valium and a big shot of Dilaudid and some Vicodin.
And you still got pain.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just when you were describing what you did, it sounds like the kind of thing that I would do. And the idea of doing a full split just, I mean, I had little shivers. Well, it just happened again. Little shivers run up my spine. Ugh.
Yeah, it really hurt.
A lot.
And I'm really out of it. So before I say something horribly stupid on the air, I'm going to sign off.
Okay, well, are you...
I mean, I might even just admit to something like, you know, I was on the overpass and did JFK, you know.
yeah, let's don't do that. That gets you a visit.
Yeah, yeah, you know. That's okay. I buried the AK-47 long ago when I was dying.
Ben, hang in there. I'm sorry it happened.
You take care.
All right. Later.
Bye.
Bye. Ben Birch. You know, I knew about this, but I didn't tell you guys because, like I said, I don't like to gossip. But you know, that I don't kid when I say that Ben is the hardest working man in liberal talk, because he is. And then to have this happen, ow! I mean, guys, from the guys in the room, just the guys, just the guy side of the room. Can I have a collective ow? Now, ladies, yeah, ow! So I'm hoping he's got a good prescription and, you know, can, you know, hammer the Motrin and all the other goodies for a while. I can't imagine how that hurts. And by the way, you know, coming up this evening at about 11 p.m. Eastern time, between 11 and midnight, we will have our second edition of the Horn Section, moderated by yours truly. Hopefully, we'll have some members of the horn community leap in, share their thoughts. Sorry to be such a college football geek, but like I said, once in a while, you just run across the occasional story that makes you just want to stand there and do some full-on screaming, and for me, that was one of them. I can well imagine that Paul Bear Bryant was probably screaming in the dirt. And I was doing everything in my power not to scream. For those of you who were hoping for some other story, well, you should have called in and brought it to my attention. I am going to finish off with one dandy. The Department of Defense has a policy. You know, there's always a policy that insists that Iraq war veterans pay back signing bonuses if they don't stay in the service as long as they signed up to. Seems reasonable. Sounds kind of like breach of contract, doesn't it? You know, you sign on for another 4 years and they give you an extra $30,000, and then, you know, somehow or another I want out now. Well, you know, you pay the money back. Pay back the 30 large. Sell the boat and pay back the 30 large. There's only one problem. We're dealing with the Bush administration Department of Defense, the Bush administration Pentagon. And the Pentagon is demanding these repayments from veterans who can't serve out their contracts because they were maimed beyond their ability to serve while deployed in Iraq. I'm not kidding. Congressman Jason Altmaier of Pennsylvania, a Democrat, is trying to fix the problem. The problem was only uncovered by a presidential commission. The Pentagon didn't even realize it had a problem. Just like that kid, the tailback who ran the 4.56 instead of the 4.35. How many have suffered and been tormented before this was brought to anybody's attention? Waiting for the other shoe to drop. Jesus Christ. Hey, who have I got?
Hi, Bob. This is Phil in Daytona Beach.
Yeah, Phil, what's up?
Well, I think the Pentagon should be paying us back the $2.3 trillion that was announced missing and unaccounted for on September 10th, 2001. You were mentioning 9/11 before.
Yeah.
And God knows how many. It was check the news, people, do a Google.
Or maybe the $9 billion they say they lost in the sofa of the Coalition Provisional Authority. That's a start.
But 2.3 trillion with a T was announced. Google it. September 10th, Rumsfeld announced 2001, and there's up to 4 trillion missing now since these bastards have been in the White House. And we need them to pay that back. And we
We could maybe shore up the food stamp budget with a little bit of that? Have some health care for all Americans?
We need these bastards. I am just so tired of waiting for the American people to get off their asses, Bob.
Well, at this point, if the polling data is to be believed, Phil, it's not the American people you have to wait on anymore.
Yes, it is.
The American people have said clearly in a poll in the last week that George Bush and Dick Cheney should be impeached and should be removed from office by more than a bare majority.
Bob, anyone can answer a poll. We got to get off our asses. You know, the problem is, Bob, the missing link to this whole equation is the people not demand. Frederick Douglass, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did and never will. The difference between now and in years past when we had social change in this country is the people got off their asses and went out in the street and demanded it. We've had the same first couple on the dance floor for about 6 years now waiting for the rest of the tables to join in. And that's the missing link, Bob. Power. The power has co-opted our representatives in Washington, both Democrats and Republicans. Impeachment off the table. That's obstruction of justice at the highest level. These guys.
Well, that was the question that I asked to open the program. Is it mandatory upon the House of Representatives to begin impeachment proceedings when they see the president committing high crimes and misdemeanors?
Well, there is something called misprision of treason, which I know the, you know, and again, please, folks, don't let 9/11 truths hang you up from looking at stuff that they come up with that helps us all. DC911truth.org has a section on misprision of treason, meaning that if you are made aware, a government representative is made aware of a treasonous offense, and they don't act on it, they are basically subject to federal law where the treason, you know. I don't know if it's up to 7 years in federal prison or what, but it makes them accountable. And I look at everything, Bob. I don't close myself off to anything. You know, I look at stuff, and if I can get something that'll help us take these bastards down and give us our country back, I look at it, and then with it, if it's something that's not being talked about, I'll call into a show like yours and mention it. Hopefully,
sure,
others will look,
sure,
at it. I think all these senators and congressmen need to pay us back the money we've been paying them. And isn't there somebody who's running for Congress or said that if he gets elected, if they don't pass universal health care, he's going to...
No, that was John Edwards who said if he gets to be president, he'll cut it off.
Oh, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, Phil, we're out of time. I wish you'd called in earlier.
Hey, I like that attitude, and if we can get the rest of us to turn the damn TV off and give at least an hour or two a week...
Got to go, Phil.
Active. Thanks, Bob.
See ya. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye. Thanks. I hate hustling people off the air, but, you know, the show ends when the show ends. So thanks, everybody. Get well soon, Ben Birch. Up next, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Strictly Confidential, with Peter Godbold. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. An American's right to bear arms will be reconsidered by the U.S. Supreme Court, justices agreeing to hear an appeal by the District of Columbia in favor of the city's existing handgun ban. Justices will review a ruling by a federal appeals court that struck down the D.C. law, saying that it was unconstitutional under the Second Amendment right to bear arms. It is a case that could produce the Supreme Court's first ruling in nearly 70 years on Second Amendment rights. A resolution in the fight over embryonic stem cell research could be on the horizon. Human skin cells have been transformed into batches of cells that look and act just like embryonic stem cells. Researchers agree it'll be years before their new technique called regenerative medicine will be used to treat patients. The world's top diplomats will soon receive a letter from Iran's foreign minister arguing the case for the Iranian nuclear program as peaceful and not a burgeoning atomic threat. The letter was published in Farsi by the Iranian state news agency, letter insisting that all Iran's nuclear activities are based on the UN's nuclear charter and the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. Meantime, the U.S. has accepted a proposal to hold new talks with Iran over security in Iraq, in particular, the provisions of bomb-making.